Everybody take their seats. Okay, welcome back. We're now in the open period for public comment, which is an opportunity for the public to provide brief comments on items relevant to council business but not listed on the meeting agenda. Maggie?
Doesn't move. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I meant to bring this up this morning under other reports, but you didn't catch my hand in time before you moved on. We are extremely concerned about the agency's decision in Framework 45 to require dockside monitors to enter the fish hold of ground fish boats to assure that all catch has been offloaded. We did submit comments on this during the comment period on the proposed rule, citing our concern about the primarily the health and well-being of these individuals who will be climbing on and off fishing boats in and out of fish holds. And as you know, Mr. Chairman, that's sometimes a very difficult thing to do, depending on the tide, where the boat, where it's tied up, and so forth. And we are very concerned about the idea of putting people in jeopardy of falling overboard, falling off a ladder, getting the hands crushed between the boat and the dock. I've been around boats for a long time, and I tell you, you have to be a pretty nimble person to get on and off fishing boats under many circumstances. I understand that the agency is going to provide some additional training for these folks, but I don't believe that that will be adequate. But most of all, I don't really understand why this requirement was put in place. There, I'm not aware of any circumstances where individuals are not offloading all their catch. The captains are asked at the end of the trip if all the catch is offloaded, and they must respond honestly, and if they don't, that's a violation. In addition, there's bound to be costs associated with this for the industry when people ultimately, you know, inevitably will be hurt. And as you know, they can bring suit against the fishing vessel owners if they are injured. And whether or not if the boat is covered for that kind of claim, that's fine, but depending on how many claims are put forward, you know, the cost of insurance will ultimately rise. The council, you know, the agency brought this up to the council several months ago. I complained about it then. The council really didn't weigh in on this. I wanted to see if there was any opportunity for the council to weigh in on this and potentially find another solution to whatever the problem is, because again, I don't know why the agency thinks that this is necessary. I think that, you know, this is not like walking into the door of a business. Okay, getting on and off fishing boats is a very dangerous activity. Climbing in and out of fish holds is as well. So, if there's a problem with fish being offloaded without it being monitored, I'm not aware of it, and but I think we need to find another solution. Maybe we have more people at the dealers looking at this. I mean, you have to have a dealer, you know, involved in any kind of illegal transaction if it's happening as well. So I think this is a potentially very dangerous situation. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I hope that nobody does get hurt. But why would we put people safety in jeopardy if it's not necessary. I think we really need to find another solution to this, and I hope the agency will reconsider and work with us to try to find a better solution to this problem. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Greg Duckworth. I'm a commercial fisherman from Rhode Island. I think we have a very important issue that I hope the council would back me on. I could give you a little background on the history. I like to consider myself public enemy number one. I was issued from basically 2002 on approximately $1.7 million worth of NOVAs, all signed by Chuck Julian. A lot of the charges were false. I've taken my fight through the ALJ system. I was ruled against on a couple occasions through the ALJ. I found out after the fact that this supposedly independent fact finder got his salary, a majority of his salary, through the fines that he was levying. So to me, that was insulting. When I got to the federal level, I discovered that the federal judge said, well, you know, they didn't do anything wrong because all these amounts were less than the statutory maximum. I'll give you another example. On one case, I found out that I know the NOAA rules of ethics prohibit preferential treatment for any corporation or any individual by any NOAA employee. After my first violation of $50,000 through the ALJ system and through the federal district court, I discovered through a FOIA that Chuck Julian gave another individual a written warning with no fine for the exact same violation in the exact same year. And I never had any access to this information at either hearing. So as far as I'm concerned, I think that's relevant information that neither the judge saw. So, but that's all hearsay. What I came today to say is basically that we need to modify the special review process for the special master. Specifically, I have a case that I was given a $280,000 NOVA by Chuck Julian and an additional $85,000 NOVA. The basis of the $280,000 NOVA was 82 logbooks that Mr. Julian claimed I never submitted, when in fact they were there in front of him for 580 days on file with the agency, compounded with some other charges. And basically, I was going to have to pay $365,000 or go in front of a judge who could raise it to the statutory maximum, which was $130,000, which would have per page. I think he said it would have been $10 million. So I mean, I couldn't afford to even fight these. So I signed a settlement agreement after they looked at my financial information. I think I was grossing maybe $400,000 a vessel at the time, where I tied my vessel up for 32 months. I already tied it up. I think it was like $10,400 a month they took off for this vessel tie-up. And now for the special master review process comes along, and I tried to, I sent a few emails to agency people that I want my case reviewed. And specifically this case, they set some stipulations that I don't think were right. One of them was that they can't review any case that went to federal district court. How I interpret that is, well, the agency's free to cheat as long as they go to court. The other thing that they said is they can't review any case that the NOVA wasn't paid with cash. Like if I paid it in a settlement agreement, they don't want to review that. And to me, that's just unacceptable. We all know that permit sanctions damage fishermen. And if there's an excessive permit sanction, fishermen should have the right to have that case reviewed. For me, anything else is just plain old unacceptable. And I'm going to continue to be here and continue to complain. I complain to anyone who listen, any federal agency. I will complain because I don't think it's right. What we're doing is you're going to somebody that commits the Brinks job, and you're telling them, look, you've got to make restitution. And they say, okay, fine. I'm going to pay back the money from the gumball machine I broke when I was a kid, but I'm not paying back the Brinks job. And I mean, I think everyone should have the right. I know other people that went to federal district court, and they have a lot of complaints about the activity on how these certain G-Cell employees acted. And to let them off the hook scot-free is unacceptable. And hopefully what it boils down to today is I hope the council can write a note to Secretary Locke and Judge Swartwood, who's reviewing all these cases, to say, look, we've heard from people and that a permit sanction cases definitely need to be reviewed. I mean, to come up with all these afterthoughts after, Jesus, if I knew that all I had to do was pay and I could have got it reviewed, I would have paid. If I knew that I could have paid a settlement and avoided all the legal costs of trying to contest a fine through federal district court, I would have paid it and had my case reviewed. Now I'm starting to lose sleep because you know, there's all these roadblocks. And it's not only me. It's a lot of people. And I don't know if everyone's under the disillusionment that everything's fine, that all the fishermen that want to have their cases reviewed are getting reviewed. That's not the case. It's not what's happening. Those two roadblocks in there prevent a lot of people, and it's hiding a lot of damage, and we need to do something about it. Thank you for your time.
Reggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rich Canastro, Whalen City Auction, Boston Auction. I have to agree with Maggie as far as dockside monitors going on to vessels. Last year I unloaded 35 million pounds, and that's a lot of trips between scallopers and draggers. One fisherman in the drink. These are experienced people. Year before, three. I'm not at fault. It's just the hazards of slime on the docks, ice in the wintertime, low tide. You're not going to get any observers to go on the boat because I'm scared to go on a boat. And furthermore, it's going to be a dangerous situation until someone gets hurt or killed. We'll be back at this table saying, how are we going to fix it? If I'm a fisherman that's cheating, and I'm going to leave the dock at my dock to go somewhere else, I'd be able to hide fish that Mr. or Mrs. Observer would not find. Are you going to allow them to get down in the hole and start picking ice because it could be underneath the ice? Or is this just a formality of I could put that person in one of those widow baskets, you know, those widow, the wheeling days, and put them in a basket and bring them out on the boat, lower them in the hole of the boat, and get them back out. That'd be simpler than having these people going on the boat. Furthermore, I have to look into it because I might make the decision that no dockside monitors are allowed on my dock. They come through the back of my building, and they go into the unloading area. They do not go on a dock. Who is to stop me? And maybe Gene can answer this, that I don't allow a dockside monitor on my dock. They're allowed in my building, but me as an unloader, they're not allowed on my dock. You are accomplishing nothing other than people getting hurt. Believe me on this. If they're going to cheat, dockside monitor is not going to find them cheat. Thank you.
Drew.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz on behalf of the Fishery Survival Fund. Come up here today on the open mic period to ask something we don't ask lightly, but as you should have gotten a letter that was just distributed to you this morning, on behalf of the Fishery Survival Fund, we are requesting that the council make a motion at a later time, probably the most appropriately taken up during other business on Thursday, to make a motion asking the National Marine Fisheries Service to take emergency action to close the Nantucket Lightship area prior to its opening on June 15th. The reason we ask this is Amendment 15 and Framework 22 are both delayed. Framework 22 can't go into place with this year's fishing rules until Amendment 15 is passed, and both are going to be delayed until July at the earliest. No one anticipated them being delayed this much when we first passed these, the council, you all passed these back in November and September. What that means is under the interim measures, the Nantucket Lightship area, which is supposed to be closed this entire year under the current, what you already passed as the fishing rules, will be open for an access area trip come June 15th. So we could be facing up to an additional 6 million pounds of scallops landed out of the Nantucket Lightship area, which would threaten the ACL. Would basically, the 6 million pounds alone, that you have an 8 million pound buffer right now between the ACT and the ACL, so it'd almost be erased right there with no buffer for any possible overage on open area days at sea, which history has shown us that we do need. That's why we have the ACT, so it'd basically erase the ACT. You'd also have extra catch of southern New England yellowtail flounder, which is something we want to avoid doing because it wasn't foreseen that this kind of effort would be in the scallop fishery. Therefore, what you have allocated was based on a different kind of projected effort. and so you'd have a higher southern New England yellowtail catch and potentially go through the sub-ACL of southern New England yellowtail, which could then threaten the overall rebuilding program of the yellowtail. And it would also potentially throw off the entire rotational management scheme because Nantucket Lightship Area is supposed to open for a half trip in 2012, and it's being eyed for a full trip in 2013. If the trip is taken this year, that will throw all of that off. Basically, it's a common sense thing that we're just trying to put. This is one of those loopholes because of the delay in implementation. This area is opening under interim measures. We're just asking for a common sense approach to close that loophole and so that people don't go in there, because as it stands right now, it would be great if you just say voluntarily, no one go in there, but you know, that survival fund, we can't, you know, legally we can't require our members to go in there, and they can't collude not to go in or to go in. And we also frankly don't represent all of the scallopers. And so we're just asking for help here to do the right thing, close the area down as we've intended to do under the management program. And we certainly hope the agency will be supportive of this. I know in my conversations there's been some hesitation, but I really hope in this situation where industry is stepping forward and trying to do the right thing, we're not going to get the no out of NOAA, and that we actually can go forward and be helpful on this. So thank you.
Anyone else? John?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. John Whiteside. I'm an attorney at Mickelson Barnett in New Bedford. I'm here today representing the Sustainable Fisheries Association regarding the looming deadline that's facing the skatewing fishery. As you all know, the skatewing fishery crashed last September, and the primary reason that that happened was due to a delay in a reduction of the daily trip limit. The council, after months of work by my clients and many, many people, a true coalition, the council voted in January to reduce the daily trip limit. However, it wasn't until April 4th that the proposed rule was published. The comment period ended a week ago, and we're now left with 3 days for the final rule to be published. Otherwise, we are going to repeat the mistakes of last year. The daily trip limit starting May 1st will be 5,000 pounds, where the proposed rule that's on the Federal Register as of right now is at 2,600. The Sustainable Fisheries Association and the 300 people whose jobs are directly tied to the success or failure of the regulations implore the Fisheries Service to act without any further delay, publish the final rules, and do so in a manner that's consistent with the 16-0 vote by the council back in January. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Anyone else? Okay, I'll turn to the council. Any comment from council members concerning public comment? I got Mary Beth and then Jim Alden.
Just to follow up on that, I'm wondering if Pat could tell us what implementation for the framework on skates looks like.
We need to check for sure. We're getting a few confused here. So give us a second.
Jimmy.
Yeah, this is a question for the chairman. There's two issues brought up. One was the scallop thing, and one was the, well, in addition to the skate, but dockside monitoring issue. And I'm wondering where it would be appropriate for us in the process over the next two or three days to two and a half days to deal with those two issues.
I would think Thursday, Jim. Yeah. I think Thursday morning the council can engage in a discussion on the Nantucket Lightship area with scallops and also have a conversation about what it wants to do, if anything, with the dockside monitoring provision. Anyone else on the council? Okay. Thank you. Moving on to the next agenda item. behind tab number one.